All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 184, I believe.
Let's see. I wrote it down. So
Think it's
let's
184.
go with that.
Cool.
184. That's
It is
amazing.
Thursday, March 23rd, 2023. And it's a busy time of year, Deborah.
Yes, you got so much going on.
Yeah, we had a fun episode last week. I was originally going to do it for the Patreon, but we didn't prep right and didn't have time to get a regular news episode out, so I just released it to everybody. It hasn't got that much traffic yet. I'm surprised. I've only got 1200 downloads on it, but we had Crow 777 on, and you seemed like you were really in your element there. I shouldn't have even talked. I felt the need to like talk and break the silence every once in a while, and I think I just kind of gummed it up. I wish it could have just been you guys talking, because you were in your element. You did great. You had great questions, and you seemed like you were on the edge of your seat the whole time.
I was on the edge of my seat. It's and I am reading again, Weird Scenes from In the Canyon. I just started it over again
Cool.
because it just brought up so much of that stuff.
Yeah. Bring your mic a little closer to you if you can.
Okay.
And
Is that better? Okay.
and then you actually went and did a little, after hearing what he said about some stuff at Woodstock, you went and watched some of the Woodstock movie
I
rights he talked
did.
about, and it did
I
it confirm what
did.
he said?
Well, all the performers that were playing at night, you couldn't see anything around.
Right.
They didn't show, they didn't pan the crowd or anything. So I'm not sure about the Who, if they were there or not. I mean, I never had heard that they weren't, but why would I hear that? Nobody's just going to come out of the blue and say that the
Yeah,
Who
it's weird.
weren't really performing.
I feel like I've watched that before, and I never associate the Who with Woodstock. I guess
Yeah.
because I know I'm a fan of the Who more from like their mod days, you know, like
Yeah.
when they were the like a soul band,
Odds and
you know.
sods.
They were like a northern soul band, you know. I love the Who. You know, despite Pete Townsend's predilections. But which they talk about a little bit at the beginning
He
of
was just doing
yeah, he's
research.
just doing
He wasn't
research.
really.
I remember when COVID kicked off, I thought I came up with a great tweet. It didn't get any traction. I said, you know, the WHO, the WHO, World Health Organization. I said I haven't trusted anything the WHO said since Pete Townsend since the truth came out about Pete Townsend.
They didn't get it. They
Yeah,
just
nobody
didn't
got
get
it.
it.
But yeah, you did. You saw like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. It was true. You couldn't
Yeah.
see Young.
No Neil at all. They didn't. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I wanted him to
Yeah.
get. We
And
didn't.
I thought, no, sorry, go ahead.
We didn't get into it, but I wanted to. He's done some like crazier research where he's like looked at the phases of the moon that he's seen at that on that documentary, and then like gone back, and you can find what the phase of the moon was like then, and it doesn't match. Because he's a if you listen to his stuff, like a lot of the, like I said, a lot of the episodes that I skip over of his are about the sky clock. He's real big into that, and a lot of that stuff is over my head. So
Wow, yeah.
but yeah,
I checked out
I
their
mean,
website. It is intense.
his website, yeah, it's an intense
Uh-oh,
show.
I think
That's
you're
why,
frozen. Oh, now you're back.
yeah, everybody that you know talked about it in the Telegram was like, great episode, you know. I take half of what he says, or I how I'm getting, yeah, I'm getting the notice that my internet's unstable, so if I freeze up, just let me know and I'll pause and we'll wait for it to come back.
Oh, you're frozen again.
Okay,
Okay.
am I good? Okay, guys, sorry about the technical difficulties. I'm having a little bit of an unstable internet connection, but we'll get it figured out and we'll carry on. So, yeah, I thought it was a great episode. He's an intense guy. A lot of people that are in the Telegram group, you know, say they love half of what he does or a little bit of what he does and can't hang on every word he says. But you know, I feel the same way. couldn't have been a nicer guy to us. I was a little intimidated just because of his intensity and the seriousness of his show, and we're kind of a goof around show. But he was really professional and super, super friendly and nice. And his booker is Rose. I don't know if it's his wife or what the relationship is, but she was really great to work with and just real professional and easy to work with, and responded to emails and said she had actually knew about our show, which was cool to hear. So, but tons of homestead news for us.
Nice.
Everything's happening. No new lambs yet.
Yeah.
We got our Ram Lambert, who was sick, who had gotten real, real skinny over the winter. We took him to the vet a couple weeks ago, got blood tests done on him, got him shot up with some antibiotics, and he's right as rain. We got the blood test back finally after 15 days yesterday. Clean bill of health, no Jonas disease.
Rose, you froze.
Okay. Am I good?
You're good.
Okay. Yeah. We got the test results back. Clean bill of health, no Jonas disease, which is in the sheep world a death sentence for your whole flock. And we were really worried about it. I kind of knew he was okay, but we had him sequestered in the barn, quarantined by himself. And we got the results back yesterday that he's all good. Gave him a couple shots of vitamin B12 and moved him out to the pasture with our other ram, Leonard, today. And they fought it out for a little bit, and they're getting along great now. So
that's such good news.
Yeah. And then we got all the female sheep and our wether off the main pasture to kind of let it come back here in the spring and let it grow. And so I've just got them grazing in the yard inside the gates around the house, because there's tons of green grass that's growing and they're loving it. So we got them sheared. Everything's good. I feel very relieved, happy, and proud of ourselves because we got them through another gross, disgusting, cold, wet winter here in Oregon. We're not out of the woods yet, but we've been having some real nice days. 65 degree days, sun, and that's what we had yesterday. And it was just a great feeling having them out. Back to rain for the next couple weeks straight today, but that's kind of how spring goes here. And you know, hopefully what we can hope for is that it stops mid-April or something like that and doesn't go all the way into May like it did last year. But yeah. And yeah. Then yesterday we went and looked at a livestock guardian dog, a Great Pyrenees. If you don't know what they are, guys, look them up. They are really big, furry guardian dogs from the Pyrenees Mountains, which is on the border of France and Spain. So like Basque, Catalonia country. And I guess shepherds traditionally would take their flocks up into the mountains during the summer. And that's what those dogs were used for, to protect against everything up there. And they get big, 150, 200 pounds, something like that. We went down to a Christmas tree farm that breeds them. They're not like a certified, like, you know, American Kennel Club, like papers breeder, but they just have them. And they're working dogs. Their parents are both working on the farm. We saw them both. And weren't sure if we're going to do it. Picked one out that we liked. Talked about it last night. And I pulled the trigger this morning. Gave the guy a $100 deposit. And I think a couple weeks we get to go get him. So we're Yay! Trying to come up with a cool Basque name to keep it, geographically accurate.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. The dog-headed Saint Christopher is Christopher translates to Cristo, spelled with a K, in Basque. That's what I'm going for. Emily's probably got some names thought up in her head that we're gonna have to go through, but that's what I hope it is. So if anybody has any good ones, get in the Telegram, let us know.
St. Christopher had a dog head?
Yeah, St. Christopher in Orthodoxy, he was a dog man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never heard that before. That's very interesting.
Yeah, we
and
got
he protects travelers, right?
I'm not sure. I got the this guy, Jonathan Pageau. He is kind of a figure in the Orthodox world, and he's a icon carver. He carves icons out of wood. Really cool guy. And then he's like a pretty knowledgeable theologian. But he wrote a graphic novel called God's Dog that I have about St. Christopher.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we're doing some, I think once a month we're going to be doing a Orthodox show with my friend Michael and I on the Patreon. I named it Ortho Bros Gone Wild. So we're going to do that once a month. Him and I are having really good conversations. And guys, the Patreon, I think we're putting out good content, guys. We are kind of at a plateau. Haven't gotten any new subscribers there in a while. Actually lost one. So hopefully it was just for a monetary reason, not because the content's not good. But yeah, we'd love your support over there. And for $5.
Frozen.
Okay. Sorry, guys, more technical difficulties there. So yeah, for $5 a month, you get four extra shows a month, guys. Not asking for a ton, but we would love your support over there. And I think we're putting out good content. I'd like more than 22 people to get to hear the shows, you know, because we're putting in effort and yeah, we're getting guests and stuff like that. So if there's anything that people would like us to do in the Patreon, we need to do a couple more true crime things. And yeah, we're going to start getting into Program to Kill. I'm like 25 pages in. They really kick it off.
It's intense.
First 20 pages, they get right to it.
The hammer comes down.
Yeah, and he kind of just uses mainstream AP news media to prove that there's like what seems to be some sort of organized, different groups of organized, different networks of pedophiles working in concert with each other globally, encompassing politicians, celebrities, law enforcement,
you name it. Yeah,
I guess. What do you know about the San Jose Mercury News? Do they have a reputation as being kind of a newspaper?
I don't know. He quoted them. He quoted them quite a bit, and as far as I know, none of the groups were based in San Jose. So I don't know how San Jose got to be such a.
What stood out to me is because Gary Webb, do you know who he is? He's the one that broke the Iran-Contra scandal. And he was writing for San Jose Mercury News. He did that in that.
Wow.
So, yeah. Interesting. Be interesting to look into that if they were like up to it. I doubt they do it anymore. Because they're probably so dependent on big
well,
tech.
I'm sure. Yeah, they were probably sold to somebody else, you know.
Right. Yeah. I guess there's probably no independent newspapers left. It's probably just, you know, owned by Rupert Murdoch or Jeff Bezos or something.
Yeah.
So
the final chapter in Weird Scenes from the Canyon talks about the dating game killer, Rodney Alcala.
In Weird Scenes?
Yeah.
Or in Program to Kill?
No, in Weird Scenes.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, it's the final chapter, and there's crossover. So that would be a fun one to look into, because
crosses over with what?
To Program to Kill.
Okay. And he was on the dating game?
Yes. And he was selected to be the date. We got to get into this guy.
Kind of sounds familiar. But you know what also is really interesting about that is Chuck Barris, the creator
yes!
And
CIA operative.
Was he the host?
Yeah, he did that one. And didn't he also do the Gong Show?
Did he do both of them? Wrote that song Palisades Park. He wrote like a whole bunch of like bubblegum pop songs. But was he the host of
the host?
Because that was before my time. They had like a more modern one. It was probably hosted by like Dick Clark or something in the 80s when I would have seen it.
Yeah, he said he would go, he would chaperone the dates, you know, from the dating game, and that would give him an opportunity to be out of town.
And he would go do the assassination. It would be like, oh, you won a trip to Romania. And he would like go Eastern Bloc and like do an assassination. Have you seen Confessions of a Dangerous Mind? That's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's about his story.
I think I have the book.
You should watch the movie. It's a great movie. Drew Barrymore and Sam Rockwell. Is that his name? Yeah.
Yeah. No, yes, but I have not seen that. Okay.
Yeah. Check that out.
You know who else was an operative?
Who?
You know who else was an operative? Houdini.
Who?
Harry Houdini. Houdini.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean,
when he would be in, submerged in the water thing, and they would close the curtains around him, and he would take, 2 seconds to get free, leave from the water thing, go do his job, come back, and
everybody thought he was still. Who is he working for? Like British intelligence or the OSS?
He was probably the OSS, because he was a U.S. citizen by then.
Yeah, but there's tons of double agents and all sorts of stuff. Interesting. I know I've heard some stuff about him, but not for a long time. But
there's so many out there.
So do we have any more? Oh, guys, one more bit of news. Emily and I this summer, if you guys are anywhere near the Pacific Northwest and have an interest in homesteading, Emily and I just bought tickets to go to the Modern Homesteading Conference in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, at the end of June. So we're going to take a road trip out there, kind of relive our amazing life-altering road trip that we did 2 summers ago, and go to Idaho and camp out. Hopefully some other podcasting friends will meet us there. I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but you guys can probably figure it out who it is. And yeah, it looks like a really fun time, and just tons of speakers and merch, the whole deal. Joel Salatin's going to be there. So, and the good thing about it is there's like a huge homesteading conference, like in the southern United States, always in like Tennessee or Virginia or something. I think it's called Homesteaders of America. This one is going to be concentrating on how to homestead, how to garden, how to do all this stuff in the climate of the Pacific Northwest. So it's much different trying to do stuff here than it is in Georgia, So it's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I love doing road trips, and hopefully we're going to find the campground that we stayed at outside of Coeur d'Alene. Now, it's a special place for us because we found out that we had won the auction, or not the auction. We got our house. That's where our realtor called us and gave us the news, the final news that it was ours. So hopefully we can stay there again. But
that'd be
cool. Let's guys, I've been out of the news cycle for a while. I've heard things, about stuff like Silicon Valley Bank and stuff like that. I listen to No Agenda weekly. I've been taking a break from a lot of podcasts. I've been listening to No Agenda. I've been listening to OBDM, and I'll listen to most of the Counterflows. And other than that, I've been listening to books on tape on Audible. I think it's doing a lot of stuff for my mental health. I probably shouldn't be telling people, listen to ours in your podcast cycle, and then don't listen to everybody else. Find some non-conspiracy related books. Listen to them. I'm listening to a bunch of C.S. Lewis stuff. I'm listening to fiction. Just cool stuff. C.S. Lewis is an amazing guy. Some of his books are a little wordy and hard to get through, but I always feel good when I'm done with them, and they're all about like a 6-hour listen. So he is
Alice in Wonderland, C.S. Lewis?
No, that's not Alice in Wonderland. That's
that's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah. They talk about the guy that wrote, I forget the name of the guy that wrote Alice in Wonderland, but he was a total pedo. I'm not listening. I'm not supporting pedophilia, Deborah. Like that guy who wrote that book. You're doing good. You're really starting to remember some stuff. And that guy that wrote Alice in Wonderland. Because remember we had that guy on Philip Fairbanks a long time ago who wrote that book called The Pedogate Primer. And he had a chapter about that guy who wrote Alice in Wonderland. And look it up on your phone real quick. I'll keep talking. What was that guy's name? It's like been reported that he loved little girls and little children.
Loved Alice.
Yeah, took pictures of them. And a lot of his photographic, it was in the 1880s, so photography was relatively new. And his a lot of his photographic studies were of prepubescent girls in like bathtubs and nude and stuff like that. And he loved little Alice, who he wrote Alice in Wonderland based on, and her mother had like banished him from their household. They talk about that at the start of Program to Kill.
Lewis Carroll. C.S. Lewis, Lewis Carroll.
Gotcha. Big difference.
Big difference.
Yeah, hopefully big difference. But yeah, and that wasn't his real name. That was like his pen name. I forget what his real name is. Oh, you know what that crazy part that they talk about in Program to Kill is John Cougar Mellencamp's keyboardist was like on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list as an international pedophilia dealer and child sex abuser. Rapist. I looked him up on the internet. Let's see if I still got the window open on my phone. I'll see if I can do a right here. Here it is. I'll read the article. This is from Fox News in 2018. John Mellencamp's former keyboardist Eric Franklin Rosser pleads guilty to child porn after FBI manhunt. A former keyboardist for John Mellencamp was apprehended last year after being named the first ever child pornography suspect placed on the FBI's most wanted list. At the time, he was on the run traveling across Montana by bus when another passenger noticed him viewing child pornography on his laptop screen. That's when you're
idiot.
That's when you're really into it. You can't even, you're on the Greyhound looking at child porn. You can't wait till you get to the Super 8 to whip it out. When the bus pulled into Billings, the passenger confronted Eric Franklin Rosser, who had $20,000 taped to his legs, another $50,000 in his bag, and $1,000 worth of marijuana, according to court records. So this guy had, this is in 2018, I think. And he had just got out of prison and he had all this money, 50 grand in cash. And this kind of reminds me of that Marc Dutroux. Remember, he was the Belgian guy, the Belgian beast is what they called him. And he was the guy that had all these dungeons and was a serial rapist killer of children. And he had like 8 houses after he had just gotten out of prison. He was on welfare, had like 8 properties and unlimited cash and all this stuff like that. So this guy just gets out of prison. I mean, maybe he had money left over from his touring with Mellencamp days, you know? But
you'd think.
So
there must have been some sort of, I mean, if he spent time in prison, there probably was
restitution or something
like that. Yeah, yeah.
seize assets seizure. Yeah, they'll seize all your assets for like pulling you over for speeding if you have $10,000 of cash on you. So you figure they'd figure something for this guy. Rosser 66 has keyboard credits on two of Mellencamp's albums, Nothing Matters and What If I Did It. What If It Did? I don't know what famous Mellencamp songs were on there. I don't know if I like
I only
the
know a couple
I
of
know
his songs.
the ones when he was really big into Farm Aid, probably like 84, 85. Pink Houses, is that the one? That's got a Jack and Diane man sucking on chili dogs, you know. Okay. So when he gets this guy comes up to him on the confronts him on the bus, and Rosser responds to by saying, quote, "Leave me alone. I know I have a problem." That July 2017 encounter led to Rosser's arrest and his guilty plea earlier this month. And this is written in 2018. Earlier this month in U.S. District Court on a charge of accessing the internet with the intent to view child pornography. He faces a mandatory 10 years in prison when he is sentenced in January. A previous child pornography conviction with ties to Thailand. So he was living in Thailand, which is pedo central there, and the Philippines. You know, that's where Gary Glitter, remember him? He was in Thailand.
He just got put in jail again.
He was out.
Same, he was out and he got put back in jail.
Yeah, these guys can't be
Just like
released.
a couple weeks ago.
They need to be castrated and like put into the wood chipper feet first. So Rosser moved to Yakima, Washington, a town that my mother lived in for a long time. My mom was a bank teller there, where she infamously got stuck up by a man with Down syndrome. She gave him $10 and he was arrested down the block.
That's a great story.
After his release from prison, you should ask my mom next time you guys hang out. I've heard you've been hanging out and having a great time, so that makes me happy.
Tomorrow,
Yeah, you should ask her.
we're walking the
She told me
dog
that
tomorrow.
story when she was younger. When I was a little kid, I think she told me that story. So, you know, I think I get my screwing with people, exaggeration side maybe from her, because she told me some outlandish stories that were not true when I was little, just to mess with me. She told me that she was a professional. She used to be a professional wrestler. She told me that she was in the professional roller derby league, all sorts of stuff like this.
Good
But
things. I like both of
not
those.
because she was like a compulsive liar, I think, just to mess with me and have fun, you know. So a previous child pornography conviction with ties to Thailand and Indiana could lead to a sentence of up to 20 years. Rosser moved to Yakima, Washington area after his release from prison in January 2017, and he was to be under supervised release for 3 years. 5 months later, Rosser's probation officer petitioned for his arrest for violating the terms of his release. The motion said Rosser acknowledged viewing online videos of Japanese girls who were younger than 18, young Russian girls doing gymnastics, that sort of thing. Rosser told Montana officers that he emptied his bank accounts, wrote letters to his family, and fled to avoid returning to prison, which, you know, it's not a good place to be for anybody, especially repeat offending pedophiles, you know.
They
In
do not
November,
like pedophiles in prison.
a federal judge in Washington sentenced him to 2 years in prison for violating his supervised release. Brian C. Tipp, Rosser's attorney in Missoula, did not re oh, shout out William Skink, did not return a phone call from the Associated Press Tuesday seeking comment. Prosecutors declined to comment as well. An investigation into a child pornography ring in Indiana in the late 90s led to Rosser's arrest in Thailand in 2000 on charges of lewd behavior and possession of pornographic materials. At the time, Rosser was living in Bangkok, where he played piano in an upscale hotel and ran a music school from his home, giving lessons to children from prominent families. The FBI said Rosser had produced a videotape of him sexually assaulting a preteen girl in Thailand. He provided a videotape of that to a man in Indiana in exchange for that man's homemade child pornography. So there's this big,
Oh my God.
back before people really understood the internet, there was, I mean, I'm sure it's on the dark web now, and there's ways that people are doing it now still, but back then it was probably really easy. People were trading, you know, making, wheeling and dealing. Like, I've got this, what do you got?
Yeah, I'll mail it to you. You mail me mine.
And that's why, in a lot of these kids in that program To Kill, they talked about like the postmaster general and like the postal cops coming and doing a lot of this stuff, because it was like stuff being sent in the mail. I think that's their jurisdiction. He provided a videotape of that to a man in Indiana in exchange for that man's homemade child pornography, said Steve DeBroda, who prosecuted the Indiana case and held it up as a great example of local, state, federal, and international law enforcement cooperation. This was a hand-to-hand exchange of materials between people, said Brad Swain, who helped investigate the case and is now sheriff of Monroe County, Indiana. Shortly after his arrest, Rosser sent an email to newspapers in Bangkok admitting he was a pedophile and asserting there were only four tapes containing sex acts with immature girls, which he made so he could relive the experiences and not create more victims. Rosser was famous for...
Oh, he was doing a public service.
Yeah, what he actually did, DeBroda said. But we have a very exact lens on how bad he was. Rosser disappeared after posting bail, kicking off a worldwide manhunt and becoming the first child pornography suspect placed on the FBI's most wanted list. Rosser underwent plastic surgery and liposuction and used assumed names and fake passports to travel to Europe, Spain, and France. And those are all countries that are named by Dave McGowan as being involved in these rings, before taking a cruise ship back to Thailand, DeBroda said. A tip led to Rosser's arrest in Thailand in 2001, and he was extradited to the U.S. the next year. The former Bloomington, Indiana resident pleaded guilty in 2003 to child pornography and international conspiracy charges. He was sentenced to more than 16 years in prison, which was the longest sentence available at the time. Okay. He was responsible for transferring...
What year was he?
2003, he was sentenced to 16 years, but he was out on the bus
going... So he's out.
He was out going on the bus in 2017, going from Washington to Montana, because he had violated parole for looking at child porn. And so he cashed out all his money and was on the run, because his parole officer tried to violate him and send him back to prison. So that's it. That's John Cougar Mellencamp's keyboardist. Yeah. I wonder if you think he had one of those keyboard ties.
Keyboard ties.
You know, the neckties?
Maybe so.
That's what Mugatu in Zoolander, he was famous for inventing the keyboard tie.
Mugatu, okay. Was he the...
That's Will Ferrell, the bad guy.
Yeah, the Will Ferrell character. Yeah.
So that one... That's a fun way to start out the episode. International Child Pedophilic Networks. And, you know, tracing it back to John Cougar Mellencamp.
Not that we're suggesting that he had anything to do with that.
Yeah. But so let's get into some of what you got, Deborah.
Okay.
You want me to share the screen?
You want to, let's save that one. Let's do another one first.
Okay.
This is, did you go to your college graduation?
No. In a true form to my working class background, I graduated in the fall semester, 2002, immediately started working full time. Got hired by the Forest Service for the 2003 fire season and was off fighting fires in Idaho at the time when I would have been eligible to walk. So I went to work.
Okay. Well, evidently, there's a new trend in graduation ceremonies. And the Grand Valley State University in Michigan is planning to host 5 different graduation ceremonies.
In I think I email. Know where you're going. Segregated?
Mm-hmm. Yep, an email was sent from the college's Multicultural Affairs Office and said the school would be hosting 5 unique graduation celebrations designed to honor our diverse graduates. And the email outlined the separate ceremonies would be held for Asian, Black, Latino, Native Americans, and Lavender, which is LGBTQIA.
Okay. So do the white kids get to walk? Or do they just call themselves gay?
That's it. You know, somebody brought that question up. So the ceremonies will be held on 3 different days at different locations and different times. And the email, you know, somebody shared it on Twitter. And of course, most people have labeled it racist. And the commencement ceremony where the diplomas are handed out will be with all students. But these are the ceremonies afterwards, evidently. GVSU, Grand Valley State University, challenged the notion that this constitutes segregation or racism.
That's and when we say the name of the college, the SU, State University, Public College.
Public College, yes.
People are paying for it.
There evidently has been a growing movement to host these segregated graduations. In recent years, Columbia University in New York said the school has held multicultural grad ceremonies since 2005. And according to them, these celebrations are for highlighting the key moment of graduation with the personal community that they hold dear. Celebrations include events for, this is for, what is this? What did I say? It was Columbia. Sorry. They say they hold, the celebrations include events for multicultural affairs, Lavender, Asian, first generation and or low income students, Black and Latinx and Native communities. So they have a whole bunch of them. And Harvard hosts separate events also called affinity celebrations with exclusive days and times for first generation grads, Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders.
They have to make special concessions for Asians now, because remember they were not letting Asians in because they were too smart.
Too smart, right. Yeah. Pacific Islanders.
The huge Tongan population at Harvard.
Yeah. And Desi Americans, which I had to look up. Those are people from countries India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Desi.
D-E-S-I.
D-E-S-I. Desi Americans.
Is it an acronym for something?
People who were like a diaspora, I think it is rooted in that word. People who had to leave those countries of India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh.
Hmm.
I didn't know there was a diaspora there, but I'll have to look into that further. Yeah. But there is a National Association of Scholars. And in 2019, they reported that they only examined 173 schools. There are over 6,000 schools in the U.S., colleges. And 4,000 of those are 4 years. The others are, and those are all undergrad. Mm-hmm. There's 6,000 undergrads. So that contains 2-year colleges also. But anyway, they examined 173 schools.
That includes JCs. That seems like a low number for some reason.
6,000. Yeah.
I guess maybe because I'm from California and there's a junior college on like
on every
corner or something like that. And I never even thought of that, like that in states that aren't welfare states like California, that's not the case.
Uh-huh.
They're fewer and far between, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. But So they say that out of the 173 schools that they examined, 76 offered segregated ceremonies. And
I'm all for
then
it.
I went to look at,
I think,
I don't know.
I think, you know, next thing we should do, we should bathrooms, drinking fountains, all
oh,
sorts
get
of
out
stuff
of here.
like that. What do you think about that?
Get out of here. I was alive. And in the, my family used to go visit. I had family in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And when I was young, I remember those bathrooms and those drinking fountains. They still had them.
Well, I went to Georgia for the Super Bowl with my dad in 1994. We went to Stone Mountain. It's that big carving in the mountains, like some Civil War general. I forget who it was, Stonewall Jackson or something like that. And yeah, there's four bathrooms. There's two men's bathrooms right next to each other, two drinking fountains. None of them are labeled anymore. They're just there, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, they were labeled when I was in Louisiana. And that was in the 60s.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So the National Review says it is disturbingly common for American colleges, public and private, to offer segregated graduation ceremonies, events, and dorms.
What's the National
And
Review?
they
Is it just
it's
some academic journal or something?
yeah. Yeah, it is. And they say that the National Association of Scholars also found out that of the 173 colleges examined, 42% offer segregated housing, 46 offer segregated orientations, and 72 offer segregated grad ceremonies. But that math doesn't add up.
Yeah, they probably
76 out of 73
because
is not.
It's because the people that wrote it attended segregated schools and probably got
exactly
critical race theory
exactly
and Common Core taught to them.
But, so Yale University president says, his name is Peter Salovey. He says that neo-segregated, that's the new term, programs foster diversity and inclusion. And a lot of people, as you might suspect, disagree with that, saying neo-segregation erodes students' sense of unity, reduces the quality of intellectual life on campuses, and perpetrates discredited racialist thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's very, very crazy. And just, you know, they have all those categories, like, but then once again, like, what about, you know,
inclusion?
The people that don't, I'm sure, like, you know, Emily could fit in there somewhere because she's of the tribe, but like, you know, people like me don't get to participate. And then you like bring that up and they'll like, you know, say something about like, oh, the poor white man can't, you know, something like that. But I don't know. Segregation is it's a weird thing once you really get into it and you like start looking at separate but equal and all sorts of stuff like that. And like Thaddeus Russell, despite what everybody thinks about him, has had some great episodes with like Hotep Jesus and stuff like that, where they talk about the segregated United States and that if it could have been truly separate but equal, most of the Black people preferred that. And then they had the NAACP brought in like all the different, all of their guys who promoted it. And, you know, and that's the segregation is when all the money kind of started draining out of their community and, you know, ending up elsewhere. Killer Mike, who's that rapper, he's done a bunch of work on and shows like how long the dollar stays in the Black community, and it's like it like leaves their hands immediately and leaves the Black community, whereas back in the day it would, you know, touch like 14 people's hands before it left. I don't that's a speculative number on my part, but yeah, it was pretty interesting. And there's a vibrant Black businesses and whole Black business communities and business districts and stuff like that. And you know, desegregation kind of took that all away. And
well, there was just a special on your favorite news program about CNN? About
Don Lemon.
Not Don Lemon. I forget who the host was of this, but there was no host. It was a show, and there was several. They called them Black Wall Streets.
Yeah,
and one in particular, I believe,
Oklahoma City, that they bombed it.
That they bombed, and yeah, they didn't rebuild.
Yeah,
they said they, and then
there was a bunch of
the Black community,
Black millionaires there and stuff like
yeah,
that. Did they talk about the first female female millionaire in America was a Black woman?
Oh,
She did, like, she made like hair products.
Was a cosmetician or something?
She made like hair strips,
yes,
or something like
yes,
that.
Yes.
Yeah.
They so they bombed that street, that business district, and the community, the Black community, came and rebuilt it, and you know, got it up and running again. And then some years later, like in the 50s or 60s, the government said it was what is it, eminent domain? Is that the word they wanted to? They wanted to build a highway through that.
Yeah.
So they kicked everybody out of there and, you know, flattened it. No highway was ever built.
Yeah. Yeah. And that probably made like, yes. Yeah, it's, you know, that whole topic is real. When you get honest about it, it's a tricky one to get into because of the stigma. But,
yeah,
you know, you read, go back and listen to Pete Quinones, like, 10-part series on where he reads that book Race War in high school, and it's which was written by a liberal Jewish New York City public school teacher talking about the disaster of desegregating and busing and all that stuff. Can you hear me? Am I frozen?
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay. Yeah, and it's just and that book's banned. You can't find it anywhere. You can find, I think he said he found a copy for $600, and you can't get a PDF or anything. He said he's got PDFs, but it's a banned book, and there's nothing obscene about it. It's just telling the story of what happened at one New York City public high school and the neighborhood after they forced, you know, kids that weren't from the same areas to go to school together, and what it did to all these kids on both sides, and what it did to the community. It's really, really interesting. And if you can be honest with yourself and listen to that and hear them read that book and not get triggered, I think it's definitely worth it. So check that out. But yeah, I think we're going to continue seeing all these segregated stuff with you know, excluding one specific type of person. And it just goes to show college is garbage. I was actually thinking about this today, Deborah. Your daughter went to private liberal arts college in Southern California. I don't know what you guys paid for it, but it was quite a bit, probably around $60,000 a year, maybe more, maybe a little less.
Less, yeah.
Okay, but somewhere in there.
Yeah, it was a fortune.
I looked up what her college costs now, and it's $67,000 a year. And plus, you know, room and board in Los Angeles, California. And what did it do for as far as career-wise?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, your daughter is a beautiful, perfect, amazing woman. When I met her, I was so excited to meet someone who had their shit together. And she had money in the bank. She was paying her own rent. And she was working for a nonprofit that helped autistic adults at their jobs, which is a great cause. But she was making, I think, gross, I think she was making $24,000 a year when I met her. And her rent was $1,200, living in a disgusting neighborhood. And she had money in the bank and paid for things, and it was so cool to meet someone after the previous relationships I'd been in and the struggles with money that I'd gone through and years and years and years of being poor. I was a poor person, you know, and I'd kind of started getting my life together when I met your daughter. I was a couple years into sobriety, and it was just great. Fast forward a little bit, so that, what, $250,000 plus education got her a $24,000 a year job at a nonprofit. Later on, she thought, maybe I would like to be an esthetician. I'm passionate about skincare, curing acne for people, kind of, I've helped myself with some issues I've had with it, and I'd like to help other people. $12,000, trade school. She's supporting our family now. Business owner. People, send your kids to trade school, unless they want to be an engineer or a doctor. Teach your boys how to weld. Teach your girls how to cut hair, do nails, do it all. It's vastly more profitable, fulfilling, and your kids won't return at Christmas break and hate you when they go there. Like, it's true. They won't be getting emails on from their school about how to talk to your MAGA uncle at the Thanksgiving table about why critical race theory isn't real or what white privilege is, because they do that. They send that shit out and it's garbage.
I wonder, I mean, I'm going to guess that it's a really low number of kids, young people who graduate in a certain, get a degree in a certain subject and then go on and have their career in that same field.
Well, look at the subjects that people are getting degrees in. Gender studies, what job do you get? Underwater lesbian basket weaving, like art. What do you do with art?
Avery was an art
I
major.
know. That's kind of my point right there. I wasn't gonna say it, but what she did. She works a cubicle job for a hospital. Luckily, she doesn't have to sit in a cubicle. She gets to do it from home now. But
She gets to work from home.
Yeah, she could have got that job with a high school degree, right? And she does well. She makes good money because she's good
I
at her
don't
job.
know.
And
I
yeah,
don't know. Yeah.
maybe it
She's good at her
requires
job. She likes
a four
it.
year degree, but
Yeah, I'm not sure. So many jobs when you're entering it, they do want that, but yeah.
yeah. And I say,
It should be I
I have a 4 year degree and it didn't do anything for me. But when I went and tried and applied to be in the elevator constructors, it made a difference. Shouldn't have, but it did. And the difference that it made is that it showed the guys who were looking at my resume, interviewing me, that I could start a program and finish it. Go through it the whole way, because they would say, like, to people, like, if you went to junior college for a year and didn't get an AA, you'd kind of just stopped. They say, don't put that on your resume because it shows that you can't complete. Because the elevator constructors had a 5 year apprenticeship. It's hard. You got to work and then you got to go to learn complex electrical stuff after school or after work, you know. And it takes dedication and half of a brain to do it. And so they wanted to hire people that could stick with it and do it, Whereas, when I was in the iron workers, you had to have like an IQ maybe above 50 to get in, You just had to have like an uncle that did it. And I saw some of the dumbest people I've ever met in my life in that apprenticeship program. So I met some really, really smart people as well, but a lot of dumb guys. But it doesn't take a huge amount of brains to punk rebar around in a job site. So, okay, let's keep moving on. I got a couple stories that I think you'll really like. So I'm gonna go
Oh,
to
good.
share the screen sound. Okay, now let's get into it, Deborah. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay, I've had this one saved. Deborah, are you ready for SatanCon 2023, the largest satanic gathering in history, is coming to Boston, Massachusetts. Wonder if Chris Gray is going to be there. That's our he's our Massachusetts buddy. Matt from the Great Deception podcast, are you going to SatanCon 2023? I know you're in the area. Why don't you go and give us a report on how's it going? All right, so here's a picture. This is Lucian Graves. He is the co-founder of the Church of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of him?
I have not heard
these are the
of him.
Guys, this is the organization that's like that's building like abortion clinics and stuff like that. So and calling abortion a religious sacrament and stuff like that. So this is a fun article with a really great ending. I think the ending is my favorite part of the whole article. So you'll really like this.
Okay.
So this is by Ashley Sobroto for the Boston Globe. The Satanic Temple is bringing blasphemy and remembrance to Boston for its second annual national conference, SatanCon, from April 28th to 30th. Have you got tickets yet, Deborah? I think they might be sold out.
No, I do not.
Okay.
Oh, darn.
No venue has yet been announced for the in-person conference, which will feature speakers discussing the impact of the Satanic Temple, or TST, on the community, an authors panel, mixer events, a satanic marketplace with artists and vendors selling goods, and musical performances. Although the 2023 schedule has not been released, last year's convention features panels including Satanism and the BIPOC community. You know what the BIPOC community is, right?
By persons of color?
Black, Indigenous, people of color.
Okay.
And abortion as a religious right. So those people can go from their college graduation, their segregated college graduation, and head right on over to the segregated SatanCon, probably. Celebrating its 10th year anniversary, the Satanic Temple is dedicating this year's SatanCon to Mayor Michelle Wu for her repeated unconstitutional efforts to keep TST out of public spaces, according to an announcement from Salem, Mass-based organization's Twitter account. In an email to the
Globe,
I'm frozen still? Am I back?
Not now. You're good. You're back.
Okay. In an email to the Globe, the mayor's press office stated that the event is not sponsored by either the mayor or the city. In 2016, the Satanic Temple requested to deliver an invocation before a Boston City Council meeting, a request that City Council denied. As a result, the dedication to Wu is an attempt to highlight what TST co-founder Lucian Graves called clear corruption on the part of the Boston City Council for violating religious freedoms of the Satanists. TST is also currently suing the city of Boston for denying their invocation request. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of such invocations of prayers being given so long as they are open and available to everybody. Lucian said to the Globe, they need to still respect pluralism and still respect people's religious liberty and recognize that no government agency has the right to limit the civic capacities of any one viewpoint or another. Fair point. The organization has had difficulty in the past getting approval to fly its flag at Boston City Hall, despite a Supreme Court decision last year that found in favor of Christian rights group ruling that the city of Boston violated the group's First Amendment rights when it refused to fly a flag bearing a cross outside City Hall in 2017. What's particularly egregious is us bringing this to court, Greaves said to the Globe. The fact that they've taken upon themselves to pick and choose which religious voices can preliminary invocations at city council meetings, which can give preliminary invocations at city council meetings, excuse me. The temple held its first national sold-out convention last year in Scottsdale, Arizona. After its initial success, TST is planning to make the conference a yearly event, according to Greaves. Greaves said tickets for last year were sold out and he expects similar attendance this year. We just weren't sure because it was one of the – am I good?
Yeah, you're good.
We just weren't sure because it was the first one, just how much the demand would actually translate into ticket sales, Graves said. But it sold out anyway, so we're expecting it'll easily sell out this time. SatanCon's 2023's announcement was met with some resistance. Greg Locke, the evangelical and anti-vax, so they're anti-vax, that's, you know, what that kind of word magic means right there.
Mm-hmm.
Lead pastor of Tennessee's global-based Global Vision Bible Church announced plans on Twitter to organize a gathering in protest of the conference in response to SatanCon's 2023's mm-hmm. announcement. Be prepared, folks. I'm organizing a massive gathering and deliverance service on April 28th in protest of this demonic and blasphemous agenda, Locke tweeted. All right, are you ready for the best part?
The best. Let's have it.
SatanCon 2023 attendees are required to show proof of COVID vaccination and wear N95, KN95, or surgical masks at all times.
Yes, they won't be protected by Satan there.
Yeah, I know. That's the one thing. I have a hard time. I need to, people in my church wear masks sometimes. And It's like they go up, they wear masks in the service. They go up and they take a communion out of the same spoon as everyone else and then put their masks back on. I'm like, geez,
what kind of faith
do you have in what we're doing here, you know?
Well, if you're wearing a mask and then eating off of the same utensil.
Yeah, it's a tough square to circle, if you know what I mean. Yeah,
I do. You know, I have a question though. You know, he said that 2022's convention was sold out. I wonder how many tickets they sold.
Yeah.
You know, could have been 10 tickets.
Yeah. Well, I bet you it's probably quite a bit. I bet you that Lucian Graves guy is doing better than I am, probably monetarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I bet he is. I wonder whatever happened to Anton LaVey.
Yeah, William Ramsey. He knows all about those guys. Anton LaVey.
Yeah, he may have passed because he was around in the 60s,
I believe so.
Right?
Because what's his name? What's the guy? His protege, the guy that did the Temple set. Gosh darn it. I hate it when I do this because when people do it on podcasts that I listen to, I yell at them. I'm yelling the name. Michael. But he just passed away too in San Francisco. And he was the one that saw Anton LaVey at a filming of Rosemary's Baby and became intrigued. And then he was the one that was involved in the Michael Aquino, who was involved in the Presidio child abuse case and was like high level intelligence in their PSYOP division or whatever. And he was also in charge of a bunch of weather manipulation stuff. And
I'm going to have to look him up.
But yeah, there's some, I think Anton LaVey's daughter, she's an interesting character, maybe came out against him or something like that as well. So,
and she was an actress or something like
that. Yeah, I can't
some
remember.
Some sort of public. Yeah.
William Ramsey.
Interesting.
A great guy to talk to about that. Odd Man Out knows tons about those guys too. So shout out to those guys. Check out the Oddcast featuring the Odd Man Out and William Ramsey Investigates. What is your next story?
If you're
unless you want to stay on SatanCon 2023, Boston, Massachusetts.
Well, I think
this guy is such a dork. He lives in Salem, Massachusetts. Like
perfect.
Yeah.
Lucian Graves lives in Salem.
Yeah.
Well, he should hold it in his hometown.
Yeah, I know. It'd be a
real boost to
the local economy.
Okay, my next story, this is from the Washington Examiner.
Okay. Is the Washington Examiner kind of the
And
one that's kind of
this
like,
is,
is it kind of like the New York Post to the New York Times or the San Francisco
it's
Examiner to the San
considered
Francisco
a
Chronicle?
right, it's
Yeah.
considered a, it's, I guess so. I don't know.
More right leaning than the extremely left Jeff Bezos owned Washington Post.
Yeah. So this one, I have that photo of, because people may be curious to see what I'm actually talking about. The Supreme Court heard arguments in a trademark dispute between Jack Daniels and a dog accessory company that creates parody chew toys mimicking the whisk mimicking companies. So this one they made mimics the whiskey, the iconic whiskey bottle and label of Jack Daniels.
And
And
it's what a dog costume.
it's a chew toy.
Oh, got it.
So did you get the screenshot I sent you, or
Yeah,
the
I
email?
can.
It has a picture, so you can actually see
Okay,
it.
we'll share screen. Okay, it's in my email, correct?
Yeah. So I'll read on while you're doing that. Jack Daniels describes VIP Products, who is the manufacturer of the said toy. So Jack Daniels describes their products as poop-themed dog toys that are likely to cause confusion and damage the whiskey brand. An example of this poop-themed damage would be the swapping of the Jack Daniels wording. On the Jack Daniels bottle, it says Old Seven, and on the VIP bottle, it says, with their potty humor, Old Number Two instead of Old Seven, Old Number Two on your Tennessee carpet instead of Made in Tennessee. So there you have it. There's the chew
Yeah, there it
toy
is.
on the right for those who can't tell the difference, and the actual whiskey bottle on the left.
Yeah, I don't think that
And the
creator.
name, I think this is pretty good.
FBI
I
special
think the name
agent
is
Sophia Ellis
clever. The toy is
in
called
my
Bad
class, I went over
Spaniels
all
instead
those
of Jack
strategies and
Daniels.
tactics, and I
Think that's
delivered
clever.
one of the top.
Uh-oh. So VIP, the toy manufacturer, told justices that it should be shielded from liability because the whiskey company can't claim the toys are misleading or damaging to the distiller's famous trademark. Let me keep going over here. Here we go. So they've already appeared in a lower court, and the lower court ruled that it was constitutional, that they permitted the toy company to continue manufacturing the Bad Spaniels chew toy because it qualified as expressive work protected by the First Amendment, and that it is a parody of the trademark and was non-commercial because it was used to sell toys and to convey a humorous message. And so the grand jury now, I mean, it's in the Supreme Court.
Really?
It's
Seems
this is what our justices are spending their time on.
yeah,
And
we can't get Ross Ulbricht's case to the Supreme Court, but we can have we they're ruling on dog chew toys.
right.
This is so
And
stupid.
a decision in this case is expected in June.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't I mean, I'm not that big on poop humor, so I don't think it's that funny. But it seems like this isn't really has no chance of hurting Jack Daniel's
I
brand.
don't think anybody's going to be fooled into buying this item and thinking it's,
I'm being like, oh, I it's
I got
squeaky.
the,
Where's
yeah,
the
it's,
whiskey?
this is a fake one, damn it. So, yeah, this is what the Supreme Court is dealing with. The Supreme Court.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Yeah, it's Jack Daniel's label is probably one of the most stolen and repopped counterfeited logos ever made, you know. every local union, trade union, has their union number and name written as the Jack Daniels logo. Yeah, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I've seen numerous dog toys that mimic something else, like a designer handbag, but it's a chew toy, you know, with the logo of whatever designer.
How about this one? They probably already came out with it. Chewy Vuitton.
Oh, yeah, that's good. They should.
Yeah, I should do it.
You should do that. You should definitely do that.
Yeah. Nobody steal that from me. That's my exit plan.
I've got another story if you want.
Yeah, let's see. Where are we at? We're about an hour 15 in. How about you give me another story, and then we'll this has been a good show. We haven't done a ton of news, but we've done
human interest.
Yeah, and then you won't have to listen to the child rape assembly line article that I have about the Orthodox Jewish faith.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Save that. I want to hear that one. Maybe
okay,
you
we'll
should.
We'll do it next week. We'll do a fun Skull and Bones one at the end.
Okay. You want me to do mine now?
Yeah.
This is about your neighboring state, Idaho, which I understand the east side of your state wants to secede from Oregon and become part of Idaho because they're more aligned with their beliefs.
Yeah.
But that's not what this is about, but
it sucks because during the last big governor race, there was, talk of that and like how the eastern part of the state feels isolated from, because they make all the laws based on in Portland. And it's true. Like Portland has nothing to do with the eastern part of Oregon, but also what Portland has nothing to do with is the rest of the state besides Eugene and Salem. So just, it made me upset to hear this woman, Tina Kotek, who, won by a pretty slim margin as a Democrat in a state where it shouldn't be a slim margin for them to win because it's such a, it's a red state everywhere except for the cities, but the cities are the majority of the voting bloc, just like everywhere else in the country. Like your state is bright red too, besides, the big cities.
Get out of the Bay Area and it's.
But I don't live in Eastern Oregon, but I have the same concerns as someone, and most of the people here that live here rurally have the same concerns as people that live in Eastern Oregon. So why was it just that they're the only ones being considered for this? Tina Kotek, who's going to be, I don't know if she's taken office yet or what, but she's, she's just the successor to Kate Brown, another, Portland LGBTQ short-haired just center of the road, boring, like Hillary Clinton liberal, probably, 1980s Republican pretty much, but fits the part and looks like it. Looks like she's, a leftist. Like they're not going to make any concessions for what I live close to Portland, an hour away, but it's a world away, get there. So, okay. So go with your story.
All right. So this is about, Idaho, and their state Senate voted on Monday, just a couple days ago, 24-11, to pass a bill aimed at reviving the firing squad.
Oh, interesting.
And this House Bill 186 passed the State House of Representatives 50-15-5, which gives authorities the option to order death by firing squad if lethal injection drugs are unavailable within 5 days of the issuance of the death warrant. Now, I don't know what
Clorox or something if they didn't have.
Yeah, I don't know what is the ingredients of a lethal injection, but it seems like you kind of have some advance warning when the death is going to take place. You have some warning.
Yeah.
You
probably
you
just
know
like
in
a
advance.
heavy sedative mixed with some sort of like cyanide or something like that.
And I'm not saying that lethal injection is any better or any worse than any other firing squad or whatever. But it's interesting that they may perhaps not have their ingredients to make their lethal injection.
Yeah.
Critics, I mean,
the firing squad's not, doesn't seem any less humane than the electric chair.
Right. Or lethal injection.
I think I'd rather shot in the chest and die immediately than be electrocuted to death. I shock myself.
Oh my God.
On the electric fence here, you know, three times a week probably, and it really lights me up pretty good, and I wouldn't want to feel that until I died.
Right. And sometimes it is not immediate. Sometimes we all saw The Green Mile, right? That movie.
Yeah, and there's always that rumor. I don't think it's true, but it's like, if they flip the switch and there's some sort of malfunction and they don't die, they get to go free.
Oh, I don't know. I think I have heard that. Yeah, I don't think that's the case.
I don't think it's true though either. You know, when I was a little kid in Oregon, they were hanging people.
They were still hanging people?
Yeah. There was this famous pedo here, Wesley Allen Dodd. I'll always remember that name. He was a famous pedo murderer here in the 80s in Oregon, and they hung his ass.
Wow. Did they let the public watch like they used to?
Yeah, I think, you know, the people, families can go.
But it wasn't held in a public
place. It wasn't held in a public square.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those in those books that I was telling everybody about, the 1 Second After books, I listened to the whole trilogy. They're in a martial law state after the EMP, and they execute people in the public square.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the book that you just mentioned.
Oh, I talked about it before. It's a book. It's like a fictional series about a community in the hills of North Carolina after an electromagnetic pulse knocks out all computers and power and everything like that.
Uh-huh. So yeah, we just want our species finds that entertaining, I guess.
Yeah.
They used to. I don't know if they did it by choice or they were forced to by, you know, the powers that be, but it used to be the hanging in the public square was attended by everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, going on with this, critics warn that people assigned to the firing squad, witnesses, and cleanup crew are all at risk of becoming traumatized. And Edwina Elcox, a Boise defense attorney, called this concept atrocious. And she says execution by firing squad is antiquated and bottom line inhumane. It is deeply concerning that Idaho is reverting to such barbaric methods. Well, actually, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Utah, and South Carolina already have an option for a firing squad. And three condemned prisoners have died by firing squad since 1976. So this isn't, you know, a new thing.
Are there even any states anymore that are still killing people? Do they kill people in Texas still? Because, you know, like California notoriously had the death penalty, but would never use it.
Right. There's well, now it's gone. So
it's gone. You know,
yeah, we don't have the death penalty in California.
I don't know.
Well, wait a minute. No, that's not true, because people have been executed at San Quentin, which is not that far from where I live.
Yeah, you live right by San Quentin. Yeah, there's that famous guy who like started the Crips, Tookie Williams or something like that, and everybody was all up in arms.
There were big protests outside the prison. Yeah. So,
but yeah, you live right by San Quentin. But from what I've heard, is that San Quentin is like a lot less of a scary place than it used to be, and it's really changed its tune and concentrated on rehabilitation now.
I know that they do have,
it's like, not quite as racially segregated and stuff like that, and
yeah, I know they have like reading programs to teach, you know, the inmates how to read, and other programs available. So, but my husband was on a jury maybe I've told you this before. This was a number of years ago, like 15 years ago. And the case that he was on the jury was a guard at San Quentin who was fired, and she was saying it was for racial reasons, and so she was suing. And it was a very long trial. Eric was a what do you call the extra person?
An alternate.
He was an alternate in the case. It was a really long case, like 6 months. It was crazy.
He didn't get to go to work.
And he wasn't allowed to have an opinion when the jury went to deliberations, because he was the alternate.
Like, was he getting paid like $6 a day or something, or whatever?
I think less than that, but yeah. But as a reward for hanging in there for so long, the whole jury was invited to take a tour of San Quentin.
Oh, fantastic. What a great reward.
Yeah.
That's why people, I've been doing it since I was 18 years old. When you get that jury notice in the mail, you put it right in the round file. I've done every time. One time I got in trouble for it, and I was like, oh, I never got it in the mail. Was it certified? Because if it's not certified mail, they can't prove that it got to you. And they go, oh, no, but you need to. So I was like, okay, well, what's the deal now? And they're like, you got to call in to see if you're on jury duty. So I just told my work, I was like, hey, I got jury duty, and I didn't have to go to work for 3 days. And then I just called in to the court in San Francisco, and they never called my name, so I didn't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I never got, I don't know if I've gotten one in Oregon yet, but if I do, it's getting the same treatment.
Yeah, I've only been selected. I've shown up for, the assignment, but I've only been assigned to one jury.
Yeah, I mean, I've got tattoos on my throat and a silver tooth and cauliflower ears, so like my chances of getting picked for a jury are nil. And I will tell them in the interview, if you guys pick me, I'm going to nullify this jury. For the most part, I'm going to attempt to nullify the jury is what I'm going
to
do.
All you have to do is say you're prejudiced.
Yeah, or
one
just
way or the other.
Like if it's a drug case or something, you'd be like, I don't think there should be drug laws. I'm going to nullify the jury. Pete Quinones had a guy on his show a long time ago that nullified a drug case and got these guys off.
Wow.
So, yeah, interesting topic.
Yeah, yeah. But okay. As we know, Brian Koberger is in jail in Moscow, Idaho.
Oh, right.
And he's up on, four charges of first degree murder. So he might be.
Has that trial started yet?
His next court date is June 26, when he is expected to challenge the evidence used to arrest him. And he's not even entered a plea yet.
Everything is sealed, so we don't even know what the evidence is that they're using to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can speculate, but everything's sealed, right? So nobody knows anything until the trial starts or is over. So I can't remember that couple that we had on told us, but
yeah. Yeah, he has yet to enter a plea.
Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll shoot him.
He
I think
the way
they do the firing squad is they have like five or six people, and then only one of them has a bullet or something like that. So they don't, or one doesn't have a bullet, or I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know who did it.
If I were in that position, I would like to choose my way to go. And I think I would choose a firing squad. I mean, I don't know how I feel about the death penalty, but I would choose a firing squad over something else.
I'd want the guillotine.
Of course you would.
Yeah. Bring back the guillotine.
Yeah.
Okay, we're at almost an hour and a half. Let's do some fun conspiracy stuff. So yesterday was 3/22, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 3/22 is, I don't know why, the number code of the Skull and Bones. Are you familiar with Skull and Bones, Deborah?
Is that the secret society in college colleges like
secret
Yale and
society at Yale that picks 15 people a year to be who are seniors at Yale that you get picked at the end of your junior year, and you are picked. You go. You have to masturbate in a coffin. Tell everybody about your full sexual history in a humiliating circumstance, and then you join the society. You get a nickname like Magog, like what George Herbert Walker Bush was, and then you graduate. You get a bunch of money put in your bank account, and you are fast tracked into all sorts of positions to advance the cause of the New World Order for the most part.
Where does the money come from that they are gifted at graduation?
Well, maybe from past members, maybe from who knows. I'm sure there's some people that do know. I don't. It's a fun little thing. So I pulled up a quick YouTube video. This isn't anything special or like groundbreaking, but just a kind of a good one. So let's watch it, okay? Can you hear and see everything?
On October 9th, 1701, Yale University was founded with the mission to prepare youth for public employment both in church and civil state. But Yale's earliest origins begin in the 1640s with a group of ministers who simply wanted to establish the theocracy in a college to educate its leaders. For a university with such humble, churchly beginnings, it's shocking then that one of their oldest secret society's initiation rituals historically was rumored to include sharing the intimate details of one's full sexual history. Shrouded in secrecy, this is everything we've dug up on Skull and Bones. Founded in 1832, Skull and Bones is the oldest of Yale's many secret societies. Historically, admission is reserved for senior Yale undergraduates. Every year in the spring, 15 new members from the junior class are offered membership on what is often called Tap Night. A custom aptly named, as the new member is said to be notified of their admittance when a current member ritually claps them on the shoulder. Skull and Bones members are known to take an oath of secrecy, so their rituals and intricacies are highly guarded, despite the fame of their members. One thing we do know is the physical location of the Skull and Bones clubhouse and headquarters. The nearly windowless building, simply known as the Tomb, is housed in a large brownstone located at 64 High Street in New Haven, Connecticut. To preserve confidentiality, non-members are prohibited from entering. The macabre decor of the clubhouse is well suited to Skull and Bones' distinctively ghoulish spirit. The tomb is said to be adorned with skeletons, skulls, and other dark works of art. There is a popular rumor that the stolen skull of the Apache leader Geronimo is a relic that is housed within the tomb's cadaverous walls. In 2009, Geronimo's descendants attempted to sue the organization to get the skull returned to them, but were unsuccessful. Portraits of its distinguished members line the walls of the tomb as well. Portraits that might feature such esteemed bonesmen like former presidents George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, and William Howard Taft, as well as the father of American football and the founder of the NCAA, Walter Camp, the man who helped create the Hubble telescope, Lyman Spitzer, Time Magazine's founder Henry Luce, Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart, former Secretary of State and Senator John Kerry, the so-called richest man in private equity with a personal net worth currently valued at 15.
So do you see that John Kerry and George W. Bush, they ran against each other. And I think there's some oath you take to be a bonesman where it's like, this is the most important relationship that is will ever be in your whole life, you know. And I remember it got asked on the campaign trail, like maybe at one of the debates about how they were both members of the Skull and Bones, and they said that it wasn't an issue, but
$0.7 billion, Stephen A. Schwartzman, political journalist and author Dana Milbank, and the youngest member of President Obama's cabinet, economist Austin Goolsbee. If you're noticing a pattern among the members of Skull and Bones, that's because while Yale has admitted women since 1969, females were not granted membership into Skull and Bones until 1992, 160 years after the club's founding. For some time, Skull and Bones was apparently losing some of their top candidates because the organization was seen as regressive and sexist. Yeah. As more women, people of color, and LGBTQ+ members joined the organization, the old boys club rituals had to adapt. However, the intricacies of how Skull and Bones has evolved to become a more inclusive space for new members remains largely as secretive as the very rituals themselves. One's membership into Skull and Bones even reaches beyond the grave, as new initiates reportedly agree to leave a part of their estate to the club.
Maybe that's what the
money. However, in return, it is said that the club ensures a policy and a promise of their lifelong financial stability. And with such an affluent list of members, it's hard to find a bone to pick with such a guarantee.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So this must be sanctioned by Yale since it started so far back.
Yeah, who knows? So here's the list of the from the Book of Knowledge. Here's the list of Skull and Bones members. So it starts way back in the 1830s. So kind of tells everybody who everybody was and what they went on to be. And it's just industrial monopolist magnates, politicians,
Supreme Court.
Yeah, so we can get up here. Let's get up into the 50s where we might actually know some of the people. You know, you never see like there's no like Frank the plumber. You know, he didn't put none of those guys on here. Everybody went on to be a somebody. This guy, McGeorge Bundy, so, you hear his name come up.
Wonder if that's any relation to Ted.
Probably not. Maybe Al, brother of William Bundy. But okay, let's get it. So William F. Buckley, you know who he is, right?
Yeah.
Crossfire,
yeah.
Right? Is that what he was on?
Founder of National Review.
National Review. So he was a prominent, you know, right-wing talking head. And he was an impressive guy, you know, compared to today's media. I think he's probably a neocon or whatever. That's who Buck Johnson's named after.
Oh. Huh.
Let's see who else we got on here that we'd know. You see that?
There's George Herbert.
Yep, George Herbert Walker Bush. Let's see who else. I looked up all these kind of, you can click on them and it shows who they are and what they did. We've got like an Olympic medalist. There's a bunch of like different Olympic swimmers on here. There's a couple guys that were like the quarterback of Yale's football team. We've got John Kerry is in the 60s. Let's see. John Kerry was a Bonesman in 66. George W. Bush was a Bonesman in 68, class of 68. Let's see who else we got on here. John Kerry. Then we keep going. Let's see. This guy's just an act. Charles Herbert Levin is an actor. He was on Hill Street Blues. So this guy, Robert Kagan, he is a high-level neocon. Bad guy. And, you know, he's the one forming policy about who we should bomb, pretty much. Paul Giamatti. Look at this guy.
Yeah.
Bonesman. Huh. I like that movie. You ever see that movie Sideways?
Yeah, that's wine.
Movie. I remember watching it the first time and not enjoying it and then seeing it again, and it's pretty funny.
Uh-huh.
Here's that. Goolsbee is his name. A good last name for a guy like that.
Cool.
Yeah. So Interesting stuff.
Very
fun stuff to get into. Be cool to do a Skull and Bones episode sometime. But yeah, any final thoughts, Deborah?
None. Nope. No final thoughts.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good place to hang it up, guys. Once again, patreon.com/DeborahGetsRedPilled. We'd love your support. And if you're a member or a prospective member and want to hear us talk about stuff, let's get that Telegram group going again, guys. It's been pretty quiet. I'll try to post some stuff in there and get some conversations going. And you know, springtime. Let's hear what everybody's doing on their property and getting ready to plant gardens and do all that stuff. So
yeah.
But other than that, Deborah, your birthday's coming up.
It is.
Well, happy early birthday.
Thank you kindly.
I don't know what we're doing for the Patreon this week, but I will get something figured out and let you know, okay?
Okay. Sounds excellent.
All right. Cool. Deborah, I love you. Thank you for being here. And
love you, Adam.
Soon. All right.
Bye-bye. See you soon. Bye.
Adios, mofos.